Hello, everyone, and welcome to For Azeroth, a podcast all about World of Warcraft. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Manny. Manny, how has Azeroth been treating you this week?
Well, it's been a very strange week for me in the World of Warcraft. Basically, live is in its holding pattern. We don't have much going on in the retail version of WoW. Alpha is chugging along. We've seen, two new builds since our last episode? And I've been, of course, splitting my time between the two. But I've been having, a lot of communication and conversations with people about WoW, but outside of WoW. So a lot of what has been, keeping my interest in WoW is actually, not when I'm logged into the game.
Which, I mean, kind of, and we're gonna talk about Mike Morhaime's interview in just a few minutes. But I think that's kind of one of the things that I think keeps people in and around WoW, right? It's not necessarily, especially during the downtimes, it really has nothing to do with the game itself. I know both you and I are still logging in for at least our Tuesdays, if not our Tuesdays and Sundays of raid, just strictly to spend time with our friends. I know that, if WoW wasn't a social kind of experience at all, then there would be no reason for me to be logging in all the time. So I think that, that's important and probably not surprising that the thing that's keeping you engaged with Warcraft is the people right now, even if it's not in game. So what kind of stuff have you been up to, or do you have anything to pimp right now before we move into the news, or?
I guess I will pimp it at the end of the show, but I'll pimp it at the beginning of the show, too. There have been some great conversations happening in the Discord, conversations about limited time availability, things where we're talking about whether stuff should have that prestige or if prestige and exclusivity is one and the same thing. Can you have something that is really prestigious, but you can get it anytime you want?
Which I've kind of been rolling that question around in my head, too, because we've been going back into some of the Legion raids and doing transmog runs on Mythic, because the Mythic set for my priest is basically my favorite holy set of all time. It looks amazing. And so I'm going in and running this content and then running around wearing it. And I'm kind of man, people are going to think I'm a Mythic raider or something. And is that okay? Is that something that should be happening or shouldn't be happening? Am I the only one caring?
I mean, on one side, it is a very beautiful looking set. And if you put the effort in, even if it wasn't right when it was current content, I think you deserve it. But there is something to be said for things like the Mage Tower, where it was only around for a limited time and you had to do it within that window. And if you didn't do it in that window, well, then you can't quite get that look. And there's definitely conversations about what if it's on the black market auction house so that it's not as easily available, but still, if you come to the game late, you have a chance of getting it in one way or another. And it's definitely a question that I don't have a clean answer to. I think there is reasons for both. I think that the exclusiveness of some of these does increase its prestige, but being something with prestige doesn't necessarily mean it has to be exclusive.
Yeah, I think I like the Mage Tower example, because I feel like that's one of the ones where I got it on some characters, I didn't get it on other characters. The characters I didn't get it on were characters I wasn't necessarily proficient in. So I feel like the Mage Tower really checked the boxes. I got the appearances on my DPS characters at the time. I got all my hunter pieces. I got I think I got my protection paladin thing done, but not my ret, because I had actually, at the time when the Mage Tower came out, I had only ever healed. I had not actually played ret pally before. So I went in and got absolutely destroyed on the ret pally. And that made a lot of sense to me. I felt like the content really hit the plan, if that makes sense. Like, and I think that there should be things in the game that exist like that. Like, I'm thinking like the mop, the challenge dungeons.
Mm-hmm.
I think things like that are important because I think you should be kind of rewarded. And there is another flip side of that too, right? Is it like anyone who did it at the time has then had that visual, whether it's a mount or a title or a piece of transmog or whatever, they've had that since it was released, versus someone like me that, you know, I wasn't running around in Legion or for the better part of BFA with this mythic appearance, you know? So, I mean, maybe, you know, other people who did have been running around in that priest garb for a couple of years and are sick of it now, you know, like, I don't know if things like lose their status symbol over time, if time actually plays a factor in this conversation too.
Yeah, that was something where people were saying, well, you know, you get the expansion to the words used were lord it over other people.
I think maybe that's a little bit too far.
That's a little harsh. Bit strong, but you have like a limited time window where it is.
You can revel in your
difficult
achievement.
Yeah. Yeah. And then after that time, it becomes more widely available, much like you were saying, hey, mythic priest gear from last expansion. Yes, it's easier for me to get now, but for that expansion, when it was current, you had that prestige attached to, like, I am a mythic level priest. Conversely, there are things like, again, Mr. Pandaria challenge modes or even the Warlord challenge modes that offered unique looks that have never come close to being replicated. With Warlords, they had the weapons with the really beautiful animations, and they have never gone so far to do any animations quite like those. In terms of Mr. Pandaria, they actually did reintroduce variants of those sets, but they toned them down so they didn't have the same flares that they used to. The example used was the warrior one in our Discord. And again, I guess I am plugging the Discord. Guys, join the conversation. But also the shaman one, where there are two totems on your shoulders. And when you are casting a spell, those totems light up. Fire comes out of the eyes and off the top. But they removed those when they reintroduced it in the class sets for Legion. So there's definitely a higher prestige associated with the challenge mode ones. But you can get a inspired by look later on at a much easier accessibility level.
Which, and I mean, like, maybe that is the answer. Maybe taking people's beloved transmogs, like some of the best looking stuff in the game that was the hardest to get, and making lookalike versions later on that aren't quite as flashy, or, you know, that it's easy to tell they've got the same sort of like look and maybe even color scheme, because that's often my biggest thing is I'm like, you know, usually they'll take things like the shoulders and the helm and probably sometimes even the cloak in those sets, and they will make them like bigger and like more. And I think I'd rather them do things like that than change the color, because a lot of times, like, I'll look at pieces of armor and I'll be like, okay, so, you know, the normal version is red, and then the heroic version is blue, and the mythic version is gold or something. And I'm just like, but I like the shoulders from the heroic version, but the helm from the normal version, and they go together because they just kept getting bigger, but they're the wrong colors to go together. Like, I wish that they would keep their color schemes the same sometimes and just make things flashier, but sometimes they do these combinations of both, and give me that or the ability to recolor my armor, really. Either way, I'd be happy.
Yeah, tints would be great. And as a male wearer, sometimes I'd like the option to, like, have the kilt or not have the kilt, depending on what I'm doing. If I'm like a resto shaman and a caster, sure, like I'll have the kilt. But if I'm like an enhancement shaman, I'm supposed to be like agile and chasing down things. I don't want to trip over that. Like that doesn't quite suit it. Or if like, let's say you're a hunter and you get stuck with like all these shaman gear with kilts, it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
So I wish there was more options, but that is something that was discussed in the interview. But before we jump into the news, though, is there anything that's been going on around WoW that you wanted to like talk about before we did?
Not really. I mean, there's nothing kind of like jumping out at me right now, unless you're trying to throw me a topic of conversation that I'm totally blanking on.
No. I didn't want to like steamroll over your week and WoW.
Not at all. No. So, okay, let's jump right into the news then. But before we do, just wanted to remind everyone that FAZ will always be free. But if you do enjoy the content that we produce, do consider supporting the show over at patreon.com/FAZ. So first of all, we're going to talk about an interview with Ian Hazzacostas. So Zoltan and Sindaris sat down with him and talked all things Shadowlands. So first and foremost, I think the most important thing to get out of the way in the, you know, current world climate is that, yes, Shadowlands is still planned to be coming out this year. Now, it'll be late this year, but it's still going to make its way into our hands in 2020, which I think is really important. We're seeing a lot of delays across the industry. And I think that it was very reassuring to hear that they are still aiming for that 2020 deadline and that the transition to working from home didn't necessarily take them a long time. Now, I will say that, and I think Mike Morheim actually touched on this as well in the interview we're going to talk about in a few minutes with VentureBeat, but there's definitely a difference between working in an office with everyone and everything that you need at your fingertips versus working from home, where I think any of us that are currently in that situation can attest to, it's much more difficult. It's more difficult to communicate. It's more difficult to make sure that everyone has all of the technology and the assets that they need when they're in their home versus in their office, when you can kind of keep everything in one central location. And everyone is working with those challenges right now. So I think that it's good to hear that Shadowlands is still planned for 2020. But I think there's more to working from home than just the transition.
I have dealt with people in the office that do that, like send you an email and follow up in 5 minutes. So I'm good to work from home most of the time.
Yeah, I obviously as a, you know, podcaster, Twitch streamer, I got used to working from home for sure. But I know that it's quite a different dynamic now trying to work with my coworkers in a more traditional office setting. You know, they're not necessarily used to the totally random comments at all hours of the day and night. And yeah, I mean, that's probably my own fault for not setting proper boundaries. But anyways, they were also talking about basically like stuff we've kind of heard before in terms of story arcs and planning. So they were talking about how the team plans 2 expansions in advance, which, again, I don't think is anything new. But I think what Ian was talking about was a little bit of a more course corrections that they were doing, in that they have an overall, call it an outline, of what their story is going to be, where their story is going to go. But then potentially the ways that they get there or the characters that we interact with along the way can potentially change over time. So an example that they gave was Bon Somdi, who wasn't going to be a character in Shadowlands, which that realization, like, I just kind of want to pause there for a second and go, what face? Like, really? We just meet this character in, like, he's fresh in our consciousness because of BFA and because we've been dealing with the Loa. He's literally the Loa of death. You follow that expansion up and you make it about death and going to the Shadowlands realm, and Bwonsamdi was not going to be involved? Like, what?
Honestly, I think that this is more to do with, like, transitioning from one to the other. We have had, like, a couple of excerpts from the pre-expansion book, and it does involve Bwonsamdi. Maybe the original plan was that Bwonsamdi was going to be offed in between expansions to help push that narrative.
Yeah, I really don't know what the original plan was. I think that unless they were planning on ushering in his boss in a different way or something, because we know, again, we don't know too much about Bwonsamdi and the role he's actually going to play other than, you know, the zone he's connected to. But I mean, yeah, I don't know. It just seems crazy to me that they wouldn't make use of that. But I mean, yeah, maybe they were going to kill him off. Maybe they still do. Maybe they kill him off and then he's, you know, because he's associated with the
Ardenweald?
Yeah, Ardenweald, thank you. I was like, I was going to call it the Druid area. And I was like, no, I've been like trying to avoid associating specific classes with those areas because that's not how I think they want to us to think about these four different covenants. But yeah, so Ardenweald, sorry. We know he's associated with that, and that area is very much about, you know, life and death and the balance and rebirth and everything else. So, I mean, he could still very well die, air quotes, in Azeroth. And then that's why he's in the Shadowlands in the next expansion. So, I mean, you're right. Maybe they originally had those plot points set out that he would die on Azeroth. And then they just thought, you know, but we won't see him in Shadowlands. We will just move on from this character now, which I think would have been a mistake. But yeah, so he is an example of someone who is not going to be a major character in Shadowlands. But because the fans enjoyed him so much, they changed their minds.
Yeah, and I hope the opposite is also true. If there are characters that the fans have really shown dislike for, maybe they sort of try and move them out of the story faster and move on with things that we did enjoy. So I'm glad that there are those course corrections, and I am glad that they do have like a major plan in advance that they know where they're going. They're not suddenly changing things.
Well, you know, except for Azerite gear. Anyways, so he also touched on covenants a little bit and kind of clarified some of the bigger questions that we had around leaving covenants, because I think originally the way that they had spoken about it at BlizzCon was that covenants were going to be a thing that were going to be difficult to change. And so they've kind of clarified that now. And it's not so much that they're going to be difficult to change. It's that, so if I start in Covenant A, and then decide to leave that covenant and go to Covenant B, if I ever want to go back to A again, that's where the difficulty is going to come. So you could kind of go through all four of the covenants relatively easily. But then if you ever want to go back to one that you've essentially abandoned, that's going to be the difficult part of the covenant system.
Yeah, and he had explained that like the covenants, much like Azerite gear, they didn't want people to just be like, okay, I'm going to be doing this boss. Let me go switch allegiances and then come back and do the next boss. So they're trying to avoid that level, much like they were doing with Azerite. But with Azerite, people were just like, forget it. I'll pay the hundreds and thousands of gold and I'll just complain about it. And so they realized that they have to do something different this time. Hopefully, well, I'll talk about it more when I get like more time on covenants, but I'm hoping that they are going to listen to the overwhelming feedback that they're getting about covenants and they do some course corrections.
I'm intrigued because I still am not in the alpha, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
You don't need to be in the alpha for this. It is the same affairs that everybody has been having since they initially put in covenant abilities. People are just worried that they're not going to be able to choose the covenant that they like because they're going to feel that they have to choose a different covenant that they need. and that the balancing between them is just a fool's errand, and they should try and remove any gameplay distinction between them.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's definitely the concern that we have had, you know, ever since they announced it. You know, I want to be a unicorn, but what if I can't be a unicorn and also have a good ability for whatever class it happens to be that I'm playing? I can definitely understand that. We also got some more information, and this Tatamine Jailer model, it makes me laugh so much. So I don't know if you guys have actually seen the comparison between the Jailer and the other Titans, because that was a big theory for a long time, that the Jailer was actually some sort of like fallen ex-Pantheon Titan member type thing. And basically they're saying like the Jailer like barely is the size of the shin of one of the Titans. And it just, I saw this image originally and I was like, oh yeah, those are all the Titans. I thought the Jailer was supposed to be in this, and he's literally beside the foot of one of the Titans, and I didn't even see him the first time I looked at the image.
Yeah. And they did talk that there is some connection between the Pantheon and what they said was the Death Pantheon.
Yeah.
But they didn't allude on that more. So I think it may just be, okay, well, there are forces at work here and they do have interaction. So the Jailer isn't like oblivious to the Titans, and the Titans are not oblivious to like the Realm of Death. But I don't think that the Jailer is like the ninth or whatever Titan.
Yeah, I don't think that he is necessarily a Titan as we know them, but I wouldn't be surprised to find out that they hearken from the same sort of like realm of power in order, because I mean there is a whole lot of ordering to death, right? So I think that I really wouldn't be surprised, the same way that like old gods and void lords are all from like the void section of power, but they're not the same. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the kind of relationship that we're looking at here. They are, you know, come from the same place as the Titans, but aren't directly related necessarily. Now, I say not directly related, and save your emails, guys. I do know that the Void Lords created the old gods, so they are directly related, but just, you know what I'm trying to say.
Well, they had Argus as the like Titan of Death, Argus the Unmaker.
Yeah.
And so there, like you said, there can be like them drawing on similar powers without mm-hmm. them being directly related.
Yeah, exactly. They also talked about Sylvanas's new armor and how that reflects her joining the Maw Covenant. Now, this is a covenant that is essentially not playable to us, right? As of right now, as far as we know, we're never going to be able to join the Maw Covenant, but it looks like, I guess, her mechanics play the same as ours. This whole time she's just been collecting anima for the Jailer and repping up with her Maw Covenant.
Yeah, she just got a head start, that's all.
Yeah, exactly. Trying not to eye roll too hard. then they also talked about a little bit more kind of like in depth on some mechanical things. So at the start of the expansion, you're only going to be able to equip one legendary at a time. You should be earning one legendary every 2 to 3 weeks. Now, I assume that would be with a quote unquote normal amount of playtime. I don't know if they, you know, what they consider a baseline or a normal amount of playtime in WoW is, but every 2 to 3 weeks seems like they've taken a little bit more into consideration than in Legion, when it was very much random. I think I have my fingers crossed that they have learned from the Legion systems.
Oh yeah. He had said that it was very much deterministic. Like, you target a legendary,
right?
You work 2 to 3 weeks and you should get that. I very much suspect. And of course this is systems that they are like, thinking about, that they have sort of outlined, but they haven't put any design into like stuff that we can get. If it's in their internal builds, I doubt it at this point, but I suspect that it's going to be a gating situation where you can, within like the course of the week get this much closer to it, much like you can get residium for your for your pieces. And even if you get do like a plus 23, you're only going to get this much residium, and there's going to be like a sort of a plateau to it. So I think that's that if I were to hazard a guess, and this is purely speculation, I think that's what we're going to see towards these legendaries.
That kind of makes sense. I mean, I hope that you can. I would hope that you could, like, if I do a specific dungeon or something, but I don't know if it's ever going to get that, like, narrowed in. I think you're probably a little bit closer to the truth, thinking of it in terms of, like, a currency that has some sort of diminishing returns over time, where, you know, if you do X number of things in a week that they consider reasonable, then you should be able to do that two or three times and get yourself whatever legendary you want. And I think that that's much better than the Legion system. It's actually closer to the way the Legion system ended, which I think was where it should have been the whole time. So I'm looking forward to seeing what we or how exactly we're going to be able to determine what legendary it is that we get. But yeah, that will come in a later build. So they also talked a little bit about cosmetic things. So the raid set for the Maw is the appearance of the Shadowland legendary items. So explain this to me, Manny.
So as I said, you can target what legendary you want.
Right.
It's not just targeting what effect you want. You can also target the piece that it is. So you could make a helm, and you could make a helm and you're like, okay, I want this to be a helm that does this effect for priests. Or another priest could be like, I want that effect, but I don't want it for my helm, I want it for my gloves. The way that the legendary will look is what this Maw raid set that has been data mined looks like. So if you make a helm, it's going to look like the helm from this piece for the cloth set. What the effect is going
then,
to be.
So then if you make, basically, your legendary items then are guaranteed to fit into the transmog that you get from your raid set, regardless of the piece that you put the effect on.
Yes, except that this raid set that they've data mined isn't actually a raid set at all. It is the Torghast legendary set. And eventually, by the end of the expansion, when you've made legendaries from like head to toe, they actually look like a matching set. But you won't be able to find these appearances elsewhere.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I see. I understand. Okay. So you will have to craft one piece in each slot, essentially, to get the full appearance. So it's not actually the raid set from the Maw. That was a data mining mistake, misinterpretation.
Yeah. Misinterpretation is the exact right word for it.
Another, I guess, if you want to call it misinterpretation, if you want to call it like Jocelyn sob inducing, you could also call it that. Apparently, blue eyes for blood elves are textures for NPCs and are not going to be available for players. Guys, yeah, if I could have a blue eyed blonde blood elf, my life would just be perfect.
I mean, then you'd have to go Alliance, maybe. But yeah, this is just them kind of blurring the lines between player models and NPC models. This will allow them greater customization when they want to do high elves in future expansions, or if they wanted to do blood trolls, they can put that customization on the player model and get a lot more out of it, because that means that they can use any gear from anywhere. And they've been doing this for a lot of different things, and they've just realized the power of it. So you're going to see that more often, but it means that we are going to have misinterpretations like this.
Yeah, and then I'm going to get sad, but you know, maybe eventually I'll have my blue-eyed blood elf.
Yeah, but they have said that the customization for players models is an ongoing project. They are obviously concentrating on the OG player models, not the allied races, because those are the ones that most need additional customization.
Yeah.
Yeah. Options. But they're not completely against adding customization options to the allied races. So if something works for like Zandalari trolls and it's not there, and they added it in for the Darkspear, well, you could see it being put on the Zandalari as well. And I think that's great, like, that they're constantly adding to this, and it's not like, well, it's an expansion feature, so I guess we'll throw this stuff in.
Mm-hmm. They also talked about how they are going to do seasonal affixes again, but they basically haven't designed anything yet. But Mythic Plus affixes are a thing that is going to continue through. I think seasonal affixes in Mythic Plus have been pretty much successful through BFA. I think it's probably the system people have complained about the least. I know we talked about it a lot with the, I guess it was the third affix, the one where there were, that went along with Queen Ajara, that had the extra adds that changed pathing potentially week to week, and, you know, changed how you interacted with trash packs in the dungeon.
Yeah, season three's Beguiling was definitely Beguiling, the one we talked about.
That's the one that we talked about the most for sure. But I think overall, seasonal affixes ended up being a win, I would think. I mean, you're much more in touch with the Mythic Plus community than I am, so maybe you can speak to this a little bit more authoritatively.
Yeah, I would say they were hit or miss, with basically a 50-50 shot. I really did like this latest one that we have currently in season four with these mini like bosses, the little
skip things. Yeah, that was definitely interesting. Like, because you got to choose where to drop the second portal, like, you could pull a boss through a bunch of trash that you might not necessarily want to do. And I thought that was really interesting, obviously more helpful in some dungeons than others. But I think overall that one was pretty successful. I liked the Buon Somdi one with, like, bringing back, like, as you hit a certain percentage. Reaping. Yeah, I really liked reaping.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked Awakening, this one, because it's a kiss curse. Reaping was very controlled, and they felt it was a little too easy, but I did enjoy it. I did not like Beguiling and Infested, because they were just seemed like a punishment. They didn't seem like you could get any benefit out of them. There was no real proper interplay, and especially with Infested, it just seemed like you could get a wipe that would get completely out of control if you just so happen to not be able to deal with it properly. So I hope that they, like, push more towards this kiss curse sort of thing, where it adds an interesting twist to it and isn't just about, yeah, we're going to slow you down way more once you hit 10. And we'll see what happens as they start actually designing these later on in the alpha or beta.
And then finally, from this interview, we got kind of hints that they are thinking of returning to tier sets later on in Shadowlands. And I found this really interesting because it's the kind of thing that they obviously kind of moved away from in BFA that I don't necessarily think was a hit with everybody. And it's interesting to see that they're talking about returning to tier sets later on in Shadowlands. So probably not in, you know, 9.0, 9.1. But maybe into the 2 and 3 patches. So, Manny, what are your thoughts on tier sets?
I thought that if they were going to be moving away from tier sets, because they didn't want to do, like, you know, they said the 22nd version of, like, priests or anything like that, and they wanted to do it more about where it came from, I was expecting a lot more variety, and we didn't get that. We instead got every clothy had the same set, and if you were, let's say, a priest and you were in battle for Dazar'alor and you're wearing a bunch of bones and carcasses, you didn't feel like a priest, you felt like a warlock. And there was a lot of things like that where gear would feel more paladin-y than death knight, gear would feel more like you were a mage than anything else. And I think that was a big failure of it. A lot more of it missed on more classes because it wasn't designed for that class or evocative of that spirit.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's really hard to design a piece. And I feel like we've talked about this in previous episodes. It's very, very difficult to design a piece that's going to work for a shadow priest and a warlock are probably the closest. But then if you design a piece that works for a shadow priest and a warlock, the holy priest is going to feel super left out. The mage is probably going to be like, eh, this doesn't really fit with any of my specs, you know? So I think that, like, it's very, very difficult with the way that they've kind of got their classes grouped and the themes around what the lore and the feel of those classes are supposed to be. They gave themselves basically an impossible task in BFA to try to design one aesthetic that would work for each and every one of those different classes and different specs. So I think that maybe, like, are they talking about more from a, like, power perspective? Are they talking about more from an aesthetic perspective? Like, I'm a little bit confused, I guess, as to what to expect at the very beginning of Shadowlands. And if they do think that, you know, if they're doing it for aesthetic reasons or even for power reasons to just make things feel a little bit more priesty versus magey or paladin-y versus death knighty, are they, you know, why aren't they making the swap back right at the start of the expansion? Like, why wait until later on in the cycle?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. And when you look at Covenant sets, I think there's still that same problem. Like, when you look at the Ardenweald set, and it's an Ardenweald plate set, like, maybe warrior, maybe some sort of tilt of paladin, but that's not Death Knight. That really doesn't feel like Death Knight.
That's kind of tough, because I think the Covenant sets very much should represent that specific, call it a faction, for lack of a better term. Like, I don't think the Covenant sets should necessarily have a different set for a priest versus a mage versus a warlock. Like, I think that, you know, think of it like a uniform. If you're repping that Covenant, then you should wear their uniform. If I, you know, play for the Toronto Maple Leafs, I don't show up in a Canadian's jersey. That's insanity. So I think that, like, that was more along the lines of what they were going for. And I think you can kind of, like, hit an aesthetic outside of Covenants. Like, you can, you know, have a mage set versus a priest set versus a warlock set in a raid, in dungeons, in, you know, all the other places you could potentially get transmog. You can do those things in other parts of the world. I'm okay with Covenants having, like, one look across most, if not all, armor pieces. Because there's been a lot of, like, I look at the Covenant sets and I'm like, I'm not even sure if that's for leather, mail, or plate. Like, because they are so similar. And I think that's okay, because in my head, I'm thinking it more like a uniform. Whereas, like, everywhere else, I feel like should be a little bit more specific to the class.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to break the fourth wall here. Something's been eating me up a little bit for the last little while. I'm a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, and Josh, you used to be a Toronto Maple Leafs fan.
Still am.
And I know you're flying Canadian colors, so, like, I was laughing and also crying at that little soliloquy.
Wait, what do you mean? I'm not flying Canadian colors. I'm saying that if a Toronto Maple Leaf showed up wearing a Canadian's jersey, like, that would be blasphemy. That would be wrong.
I thought you had been converted by your
No,
your husband,
no,
though.
not at all.
Okay, I can go back with the show then.
Yeah, oh my God, no, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to give you a hockey heart attack there. No.
Okay. Whew. But for everybody else, yes, if you are looking towards more tier sets in a cosmetic thing, I'm not entirely sure if that's what they're saying, or if it's more about the tier sets in that you accumulate this set that then gives you power for that tier. I'm really looking forward to it for both reasons, because I think that tier sets gives you a reason to continue to do whatever dungeon raid that tier set comes from after you've completed it. Like, once we completed Nyalotha, there was very little reason to go back and try and, like, take down certain bosses. And maybe Nyalotha is the wrong thing,
yeah,
because
it's the end of the expansion. Yeah, but if you think of Eternal Palace is a fairly decent example, because I know, like, there were a couple of specific to Eternal Palace, whether you're talking about, like, benthic gear with those added abilities, or even some of the options for your Azurite gear, those Azurite traits. There's examples in Nyalotha as well that are very specific to their patch. So with Nyalotha, it was, you know, if you have more than 25 corruption, get this bonus. And in Eternal Palace, it was like, do more damage to things you find, but only when you're in the Eternal Palace or Nazdatar. And it was kind of like, well, that's all well and dandy, but this effect literally gets turned off as soon as I step foot, not even into the next patch, but out of the zone or out of the raid. And I think that that's kind of unfortunate, because then, you know, if when you're moving from a 0.2 to a 0.3 patch, if you have run the content over and over and over again to complete a tier set and get a special ability, I like that that doesn't go away, that you're rewarded a little bit in the next set of content by having that. Now, like you said, with Nyalotha, it's a little bit different because it's the end of expansion, so you're going to be replacing all that stuff. Like, you're a tier set at the end of an expansion isn't as important as a tier set, you know, from one of the earlier patches. But I do think that there's definitely something to be said for, you know, the earlier on patches having tier bonuses.
Yeah, it's something that you want to clear through so you have that little bit of power that you will last you into the next tier. I think it is definitely something I would hope that they bring back.
But yeah, some of that carryover.
Yeah. But that was not quite clear in this interview. We'll see as they maybe give us more information later on.
We had another interview in the past couple of weeks. This one was VentureBeat talking to Mike Morheim. And we also had a little bit of follow-up from Ghostcrawler, who, if you guys have been around for quite a while, will know Ghostcrawler used to talk to us all the time on Twitter. And then he left Blizzard and he went to Riot. And it was a very sad day. Not for Riot fans, obviously, but definitely for Blizzard fans, because Ghostcrawler used to be this, like, incredible font of information. Like, I don't know who gave him the go-ahead to talk to the people, but we appreciated Ghostcrawler so much in the time before Ian and Lore do Q&As. He was just, yeah. He was so great. I think a lot of people really enjoyed his interaction.
And the community team has picked up some of that. So, like, Kyvex, I know, does a lot of stuff on the forums, but the water coolers were something that Ghostcrawler was, like, famous for, and I really loved that. But yeah, he had a bit of a take of what was said in the interview, but, like, let's talk about the interview first, I guess.
Yeah, that's we should probably start with, you know, the stuff that he was commenting on. So essentially, Mike Morheim sat down with VentureBeat, and they covered a lot of topics that were quite interesting, I think, and not necessarily new information. I think that we'd heard a lot of the things that Mike was talking about over time, and he just kind of was piecing it all together. And I also think that a lot of the reactions to this interview have to do with the interviewer himself and what a good job he did. And he definitely did a good job. I think a lot of people were really happy with the questions that he not only asked, but got answered. And, you know, before we dive too much into this, I do kind of want to just as an aside, as a peek behind the curtain, or, you know, what have you, when it comes to interviewing. I mean, I can't really speak too much to companies outside of Blizzard, but I have interviewed quite a few Blizzard employees in the past. And I think the big difference between this interview and a lot of other things that you might see from other content creators is Mike Morheim doesn't work at Blizzard anymore, you guys. He can say whatever the hell he wants. And I think he still wanted to obviously protect people working at Blizzard, because I think a lot of his answers were still very measured. But I think the interviewer was allowed or able to ask a lot of questions that other content creators aren't necessarily at liberty to when they're interviewing current employees of Blizzard. And this has nothing to do, like, I'm not bashing Blizzard by saying this in any way, shape, or form. Like, it's, I think, would work the same across many different games and many different developers. It just so happens that my experiences are largely with Blizzard employees. But I mean, like, then you can't just, for a multitude of reasons, you can't ask whatever you want when you're interviewing a current employee. There's a lot of handling. There's a lot of just like PR and marketing going on, and the creators don't want to burn any bridges. You know, the employees don't want to get in trouble. And there's kind of a mutual respect there because of that. And so there's a lot of like we could, sitting down and interviewing someone about a Blizzard game, we could ask questions, but there's very little to be gained there in asking the quote unquote really tough questions. There's a lot of times where we know that what we want to know the answers to, they're not going to be able to give us. And so at that point, it's like, okay, we could sit here for 5 minutes and I could say, you know, tough question A, and they could say, sorry, no comment. And then I could say tough question B, and they can say no comment. And I can say tough question C, and they can say no comment. And I'm like, well, we've just wasted 5 minutes of everybody's time. So I think that there's an amount of that that didn't happen in this interview because, like I said, Mike Morhaime's no longer employed by Blizzard. So he's able to speak a little bit more freely. But I've seen a lot of people compare this interview to other content creators' work and saying, like, see, these other content creators don't know what they're doing. They don't play the game, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And that's not true. It's just that there was a different level of freedom in this interview than what you're probably normally used to seeing. And I think a lot of that has to do with just straight up employment status.
Yeah. And I want to say that, like, some of the good interviews, like really good interviews that are with people who aren't as off the chain as like Mike Morhaime and Ghostcrawler are when they're talking about their former employee, are the ones that actually do like proper follow up questions where they get an answer and it may have been maybe evasive or not quite the thing, and they do a follow up. That's different than being able to ask about maybe something that would be touchy or taboo. Mm-hmm. That sort of stuff is obviously controlled.
Yes, exactly. So in this interview, Mike Morhaime did actually get to kind of do almost like a retrospective on, you know, WoW when it started versus WoW now, and the differences between the systems and the social interactions within World of Warcraft, and, you know, what that was like back in the day versus now, and, you know, what's working, what's not working. They got into talks about monetization as well, which, you know, is always going to be a hot button topic. And there were some things said that, again, I feel like is stuff that it's not necessarily new, but I think having all of this information kind of confirmed in one place is the novelty here. Because Basically he was talking about how they, you know, in the early days, there was a lot more, you know, you had to do like player organization, and so much of Warcraft was like the first social network, for lack of a better term, where there was just so much socialization going on in Warcraft. And it was definitely the most social Blizzard game, one of the most social games at the time, because this whole idea of playing games and communicating with other people in those games over the internet, like, these were all quite novel ideas. We're living in a totally different time now. So I think that, you know, him really pointing that out and pointing out how their systems were used was quite interesting. And then also talking about just kind of the social dynamics of organizing a large group and how, like, coordinated content groups have gotten smaller and smaller and smaller in order to become easier and more accessible, and how difficult it is to find the balance between accessibility and, I guess, difficulty or challenge. And I thought that was a really interesting part of the conversation.
And yeah, we're talking purely on a social spectrum here, like being socially acceptable, not having the hurdles of having to organize yourself and 39 other people, obviously makes it easier for you to just like get into the content. And the streamlining has helped reduce that. So, quote unquote, LFR, where you're looking for raid and you just press a button and it'll find the rest of the people and you'll jump in. definitely allows you to see things that you wouldn't be able to if you were crushed for time or not able to like set aside a specific time. Because there are people who might have, like, let's say 5 hours to play in a week, but can never find the same 5 hours. So they can't do two raids a night at 2.5 hours. And it's not that they don't have the time. It's just that they can't.
They don't have the
put
schedule.
Aside a specific schedule for it. And I don't think that that is necessarily wrong. But yeah, it has taken away something where there were people who like would join a group and they would have to behave, because if they didn't behave and they got kicked from the group, they couldn't just press a button and join in another minute later because they're the tank. They'd have to sit and they'd have to coordinate to putting together a group, and then they'd have to march out to the stone, summon people and get going. So yes, your each run was actually precious instead of a bunch of people who go like, you're weak, and then rage quit.
Yeah. And I can completely understand that. And I think there's a lot of value in that, though, as someone who often has very limited time. And I think it's just, you know, what we're used to in games in general now, not only within, you know, World of Warcraft, but just online games in general. It's like, even, you know, Manny and I play a lot of Dead by Daylight, and Dead by Daylight is 4v1. We don't have to try to coordinate and find two other players to queue up with a four man. We just queue in the two of us together, and the game figures the rest out for us and finds us other players to group with. And so that just kind of is the way that online multiplayer games work now, for better or for worse, outside of WoW Classic.
Yeah, and it definitely is sort of a lightning in a bottle moment that it was novel to be able to like find somebody out in the middle of your gameplay and be like, oh, wow, like, let's hang out for a while. And I don't believe I've ever had the same relationships that, like, and I actually mean like relationships, friendships that I have kept for over a decade playing WoW, where I have met somebody literally online and like forged friendships with and actual relationships. I don't think I've ever done that in any other game, but I don't think if WoW came out today and we were able to like sort of rewind the clock, but with today's technology, I don't think it would do the same thing. And that's actually where we get into what Ghostcrawler was talking about.
Yeah, and Ghostcrawler made some really interesting points. I actually found that Ghostcrawler's kind of Twitter thread, which we've linked in the show notes, was more informative or like more eye-opening, because he talked a lot about the social features of WoW and the timing of WoW, in that, like I did mention, social media was a fairly new concept. Like, there was no Discord, there was no, I mean, at that time there was no like Skyping or anything else. Like, there were none of the programs that you guys are used to. There was no, even like Twitter would have been in its infancy. Like, this would have been around like the start of like Facebook. Like, this is the time frame that we're talking about when we're talking about the state of social media when WoW started. So you had people using WoW to actually communicate with people online, like sending each other actual messages through, whether it was, you know, your guild chat was your instant messaging. If you had something, you know, longer or private to say, you would shoot them literally a piece of in-game mail, not to send them mats so they can go make some of your pots. Like, literally, hi, how are you? How was work today? Like, you know, the stuff that we are just so used to using these 8,000 social apps for, that just didn't exist. So people would get into World of Warcraft and spend hours upon hours upon hours, like possibly not even doing anything, just, you know, standing in main cities and talking to their friends, because that was the platform that they had to do that. And I think that's why it's so difficult now to replicate that, is because we just have so many other ways to connect and communicate that nothing is ever going to be WoW again, basically.
Yeah, very, very much so, especially because we have those sort of groups and everything. And we can take that group and move to another game. Out comes Valorant, and the same people who were in a Discord towards Overwatch or towards CSGO, they take their same group of friends, they jump into Valorant, and they don't make new friends in Valorant most of the time. They just take the same social group and go into the next game. So the next game can't create that social group. There's already established groups jumping into it.
Mm-hmm. Which then, you know, creates huge challenges when it comes to trying to shape your game's community, right? Because you mentioned how, you know, like each run used to be sacred and you didn't want to get kicked out and you couldn't be a jerk because the next dungeon or match wasn't right around the corner. Like, you actually had invested time into people, which is not necessarily something that we do in current systems. And there is definitely something to be said for systems being a little bit more difficult to access, potentially, you know, putting people on their best behavior versus, you know, making it super easy to play for people who might not have a lot of time. And it's definitely a balancing act. I don't think any game has necessarily like nailed it in the current gaming climate that we've got. But I think it's good to know that people are definitely aware of it. But yeah, like to your point, Manny, about moving community to community or like groups of people moving from game to game, it becomes very difficult for a game to actually say, this is what our community is. And I know a lot of online games have really struggled with, you know, keeping their communities in line and kind of putting forward the right community guidelines and fostering just care of others in their games, because all of these groups, whenever you're bringing random people in through any of these like looking for group mechanics, it's so easy to get into another group that you just don't have to worry about being a dick. And you should always be worried about that. Don't be a dick, you guys.
The social contract, and that's basically what pulls these groups together or tears them apart, is only as strong as the punishment involved in breaking the social contract. If you sit down and it takes you half an hour to form a group, that's a lot of time invested. That makes it harder for you to throw away the group. If you get ratings knocked off every time you get thumbed down, that's the way some games have enforced a social contract, but it can also be manipulated. Like, there's a lot involved in it, and I really do think that Ghostcrawler is a good person to talk to about this, because Riot and its issues with its community is a big one, mm-hmm. and having come from World of Warcraft, there's also that take on it. But I would say that it is really hard in this day and age to actually have a strong social contract in a game without options being limited. If people were stuck with only being able to do runs on their server, like is the case with Mythic for the first little bit until the Hall of Fame is going, those create very strong social contracts while that's available. You don't want to burn a bridge with your mythic raid group if you're on a server that doesn't have many mythic teams. When you're on a very high pop server with a lot of mythic teams, you have more bridges to burn, but you can also still develop a reputation within that mythic community. Conversely, if you're dealing something with Mythic Plus, the way that the social contract is informed is that they slap you with a rating, and people don't get their rating affected based on like what kind of person they are. They get their rating affected by how high a key can go, and that's what replaces a social contract. And so I really do think that limiting the connectivity sometimes has a very strong benefit.
Yeah, and it's really interesting talking about, you know, smacking somebody with a rating, because I mean, I feel like it would be really interesting if sites somehow, like Raider.io in this specific instance, if they had some sort of thumbs up, thumbs down, in addition to keys that you're completing, because I feel like if you're being a jerk, then people aren't necessarily going to want you to come in their group. So if I see like, okay, this guy can do 15 keys, but he has a really low social rating, I might take the person that can, you know, only has proven they can do 11s or 12s, but has a really high rating. Or I might be like, that guy who has a 15 rating, or who has, you know, the high completion but low social rating, maybe people just are, maybe someone is tanking his rating. Maybe people just don't want him to get into groups anymore, but he had to be able to get into groups to complete level 15 keys. So maybe I will give him a chance. Like, adding some sort of social element to some of those rating systems, I think, might at least allow you to use your brain a little bit and make some decisions about whether you want to play with this person or not. I mean, alternatively, you just invite the high key guy, and if he's a jerk, you kick him out. But yeah.
And there have been sites that have done that. There was a group finder site that you could schedule raids for whatever reason, or schedule rated battlegrounds, and it was outside of WoW. And they actually had a full rating system after the event was complete. Didn't show up without notice, was a good person, and that sort of stuff was all included in it. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty good, but when it fell to the side, because Raider.io sort of picked up over it for some things, those social ratings didn't transfer over. And so with it not being in the game, it loses a lot of teeth.
Well, and that's the I think most interesting part of this conversation is that, you know, everything that we're talking about right now, people getting slapped with ratings, you know, rating people's social interactions, all that kind of stuff, is all being done by third parties. It's not being done by the game. If anything, the game is making things harder to get a good social interaction because all these tools are just so easy to use. And the queues are relatively short for most things that you want to do. I mean, the worst queues I've probably had are, you know, DPS and LFR, or, you know, sometimes potentially PvP. And even then, those queues are, you know, 20 minutes and I don't have to, like, my game doesn't stop while I'm in a queue. You know, maybe that's the answer. Maybe not letting you interact with anything while you're queuing is the way to give these groupings and these queues a little bit more weight without, you know, making it a 2 to 3 hour endeavor. But yeah, that does seem like punishing people who, you know, aren't being jerks for no reason.
I've always loved the two-tier queuing system. So you have the regular queuing system, and then you have people who are considered toxic that get queued up with each other. And so, like, the quality, you could have people who are, like, killing high-level content, but they're toxic, and they only deal with toxic people, and that's where they live. And then you have people who are more sociable, and they have queues with people who are not as toxic. And I think that's always been a great system. I would want that in WoW.
Yeah, except for that obviously comes with the problem of, well, what do we do when, you know, a nice person accidentally gets put in with a bunch of toxic people who then vote them down into, you know, toxic hell, toxic queue hell. And you're just like, well, you know, how do I appeal this, or how do I change this? Like, there's got to be a way to potentially reverse a bad rating, I guess. But again, that's something for, you know, game designers to figure out, maybe more so than me. But I agree. No, I like the idea too of, because I think that happens in Heroes of the Storm, right? Where you can actually, you can get muted for, you know, if you have too many reports against your account.
Exactly. And there's also the relative strength of the ratings too. There are games that it's like, when you go into like the like bad place, you can't rate anymore, and the length of time you're in the bad place is based on how many times you've been sent there and how frequently, right? So you don't get stuck in a bad place because bad people are keeping you there. But when you go to the good place, if you continue to be toxic and you keep getting sent back, you stay there longer, right?
I love how we're like literally trying to figure out the good place, bad place, like from the show.
Yes.
How do we actually solve this moral conundrum? Well, I think that that's pretty much it for the interview for with Mike Morheim and Ghost Crawlers kind of follow up questions. So if you guys didn't see that interview or missed Ghost Crawlers tweets, you can find the links to those in our show notes, which are at tdistudios.com. Before we jump into kind of the back half of the show here, we do have a little bit of kind of bits and pieces, miscellaneous alpha news for you. So the, I guess, kind of like big piece, if you're a Demon Hunter fan, is that the restriction that would allow you to only have one Demon Hunter per realm is going to be lifted with the Shadowlands pre-patch. I think my Demon Hunter is still like 98. I think I played through the opening story and that might have been it.
Okay, yeah, it's just because Demon Hunters started so late in the leveling process, they didn't want people to be creating a bunch of Demon Hunters just to skip leveling.
Yeah,
now that they're being shifted, that Demon Hunters start at level 8 and then join the main story at level 10, there's no advantage, so they're removing that. And it's just about allowing people the freedom now that they don't have the potential for abuse.
Right. They also, I guess, did a big change to balance druids.
Yes. So there's a lot of changes. The reason that like the balance druid change is highlighted is because it shows that they are trying to listen to feedback and they're trying to make these changes before it has to go live. So with balance druids, they got back their eclipse setup, which basically meant that half the time their solar powers were increased, and then half the time they would empower their lunar cycle. But it was you flipping back and forth and not quite being able to control it, so people felt like sort of lost. And that's how it was originally back in like Wrath and that, where it was. But they re-implemented it because they wanted to get it back to its roots. People didn't like it, and so now they've made it very much controllable so that you know when you're going to go into your lunar cycle, you're going to know when you go into your solar cycle, and you can adjust accordingly. So I think it's showing that they want people to have control and not be lost to RNG.
Well, and the other piece to that is that they are really listening to feedback, right? I mean, they could have just said, no, we're taking everybody back. We're adding all these things back in, you know, we're returning to what you all say you want, you know, but they're not. They're like, oh, okay, yeah, this doesn't make sense. You guys don't like the play style. All right, well, let's try this and see if it works better. So I'm glad that they're listening, not only that they're listening to feedback, but I'm glad that people are taking the time to actually give them the feedback. So warriors are now available to be tested in Torghast. What does that even mean?
So with the first Torghast testing, there was a way to cheat in certain classes that weren't actually supposed to be tested. Warriors were among them. Shamans were another one. I never actually got to test it. I should have known. But now they've opened up warriors so that you can actually test warriors properly for Torghast, along with a number of different Torghast changes, so that it is not quite the random roll of did you get the right bonuses at first and then it becomes easier. It actually is seeming to scale better, and Torghast has seen a number of changes, and now warriors are open for testing. I really enjoyed testing on the warrior, Joss. There was a couple of builds, including the ability to just be, I kind of called it the bard warrior, where you would shout, which would cause you to do another random shout and then have like bonuses based on that. So you would be like running around just yelling at the top of your lungs as part of your rotation.
That's actually pretty awesome and very in character for warriors, I think. Battle shouts on steroids. So they also talked about removing Pathfinder, right? So is this tied hand in hand with flying, the 280% flying being removed? Like they're just kind of revamping all this stuff together?
The 280 flying removed was part of them not wanting to break up the flow of leveling, because obviously you learn mount speed and then you have all the different upgrades, and they're like, well, you know what, there's a little too many times that you have to stop your leveling, go back to Stormwind or Orgrimmar, learn the next level of flying, and then get back into right. the action. So they've removed 280% flying, and as soon as you would learn that, instead you're learning the full 310% flying.
I was going to say, yeah, because it's like, it's the difference between 280 and 310, right? Which really that extra 30% when we're talking
there's 160% flying too.
Yeah, like, yeah. Yeah. I can see why. And I can get having a slow fly and a fast fly. Like I understand that, but I think that like the difference between 280 and 310 was maybe not big enough to justify an entire level. Whereas like the difference between, yeah, like something at 150% or sorry, 60 or whatever it is up to 310, like yeah. that's almost doubling your flying speed, right? Like that makes a big yeah. difference.
Yeah. It's a huge difference. I am interested to know if people, when they get converted over, if they were at 280, do they instantly get pushed to 310 or do they get slowed down to 160? I'm assuming that they don't get slowed to 160 because that would feel like a real kick in the teeth.
Yeah, I'm assuming that because they would have like purchased that upgrade that they have just, you know, I think they'll just get bumped up. That would be my guess.
Yeah. And then along the same thought patterns of having that flow is that they didn't want Pathfinder to like be a weird break for some people. So,
right, because you can choose Warlords or Legion as like your leveling experience, right?
Yeah. And you could then go and learn flying, go back to your leveling, and then it's like, no, actually, you can't fly. And so they felt that that was awkward, again, breaks up the experience. So they've removed it for Warlords and Legion, but not BFA. And for BFA, I guess it sort of makes sense in well, that.
If I had to guess, and this, I mean, I think probably could use another design pass, another look, but I would imagine that they're leaving Pathfinder in BFA to keep people on the ground for that expansion, because that expansion is going to be the brand new player experience, right? Like if you have never created a WoW character, you play through the new starting zone, then you go to BFA and BFA is your leveling experience, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can imagine that they would want people like new, very, very specifically new players, that they would want to keep them on the ground, to introduce them to all the different systems in current WoW, to have them really get a feel for the world, like all the things that they talk about losing as soon as you're able to fly through content. And I think they probably want that leveling experience to be a little bit longer. Like they don't want you to be able to skip through it quickly, because you're being introduced to the game, right? That is your new kind of starting character experience. So I can see why. That
was exactly my first thought.
Yeah, so I can see why they would want to leave it in. But I think if they're able to flag accounts as like brand new characters, like brand new WoW accounts, you know, whatever, then mm-hmm. they should also be able to say like, okay, you stay on the ground, but everybody else who's a returning character or has multiple characters, has a max level character, whatever the kind of like criteria is on the back end, like remove Pathfinder for them, let them fly, but keep, like, I understand keeping the new players on the ground. And I think that's a good choice. I'm behind that. I'm totally on board with that thinking. But I think if you've, you know, if you have other characters, like let them fly, remove Pathfinder from BFA too.
Yeah, I was thinking similar to that, except that I was thinking that if you're flagged as a new account, flying does not show up as something trainable until you hit 50. And then it goes, hey, you've unlocked the ability to train flying now. Just because if you wanted to keep them grounded, then that's the way to keep them grounded rather than them, again, going through BFA being like, oh, I've learned how to fly. Wait, why can't I fly? Like, again, it's just an awkward thing that I wouldn't want new players to encounter right away. And I'd rather you hide that from them than to lock it for everybody else.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. I think that this could use another look, could use some feedback, could, you know, potentially use another pass. Because, yeah, I think that the not letting new players fly is a good idea. But everybody else, just get them off the ground. Who cares? And then finally, we have new Covenant abilities that have been added or data mined.
Yeah.
Anything in particular there that you wanted to highlight?
I think it hints towards what the next zone that will be unlocked. Like, there was already a roadmap that said that we're getting Revendreth followed by the Ouroboros. But for the main zones, I think what we're going to be seeing is Ardenweald next, because that has seen a lot more being introduced. I'm a little worried about Covenant abilities, as I said at the top of the show, but we'll see how they get put in. There are a lot of fun abilities being thrown in, and so I'm glad that not every ability for one Covenant is the strongest ability. But they're going to have to be doing a lot of fine tuning on these to make sure that they're within the same realm, because some abilities are just far away better than the other ones.
Mm. Yeah, again, I mean, obviously this is alpha. Everything is subject to change. And I can imagine that we'll be seeing a lot more changes, especially around the covenants and their power levels specifically. And tuning around different classes and stuff. I'm sure we're going to see a lot of that in the coming weeks and months. So, Manny, thank you so much for pulling together all this alpha info, because, again, alpha's totally not on my radar right now. So I appreciate your expert knowledge in the alpha camp.
With alpha, like, of course, there's lots of people streaming out there. There's lots of information that's out there. All of it is alpha, as you keep saying, and I just want to remind our listeners, nothing is set in stone. We are seeing some major shifts, even when they said that they weren't going to be doing major shifts. They are actually course correcting quite rapidly. We're getting builds pretty much every week, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it develops.
That brings us to our community resources and add-on section, and this week, it's not so much something we have to tell you, is something that we would like you to tell us. So Manny, put out your call for help.
Yes. Okay. So every week or every other week or every other show, I bring you guys add-ons on like how it, and tell you how it can help you. But this week I need your help, because one thing that I've never really sorted out is my bags. My inventory is something that I've always used the base UI. I've shifted things around manually, I've taken screenshots, shown it to guildies, I've been laughed at by guildies, rightfully so. It's mm-hmm. an absolute disaster, but I'd like to fix it going into Shadowlands. So I'm putting the call out. I'm asking for your suggestions on which organization add-ons, bag add-ons you guys use, what you recommend, and I'm going to go through these. Probably pick the best two or three and then look at those and make a choice and share that with the rest of the community.
So again, you guys can submit suggestions into us by tweeting them to myself, Manny, or at Faz Podcast. You can also email fazpodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit us up in Discord at bit.ly/FazDiscord. That is also how to get in touch with us for our email section. You can do any one of those things like Xander did. And Xander's question this week is, do you have a checklist of stuff that you want to accomplish in-game before 9.0 hits? So for me, very specifically right now, I have become obsessed with transmog, because I think I've mentioned on the show before, my priest is actually a boosted character. So I boosted her at the start of Legion because I boosted a lot of my characters. I used up all my boosts in Legion because I wanted to see a lot of that class specific content. So my priest doesn't have, and I don't actually have a lot of cloth wearing characters, period. So my priest had no transmog. And when I went to start raiding with her at the end of Nyalotha, the team very graciously allowed me to come back, which I actually don't even know if I talked about that on the show, but I have started raiding at least one night a week again. But a lot of that also has to do, oh, maybe I did when we first went into lockdown. It's all coming back to me now. but I did go back to raiding at least, moderately casually when everybody was pretty comfortable with the Nyalotha raid. So anyways, when I went to go back into raid, and this makes me sound so ridiculous and so shallow, I literally had nothing to wear and it was so upsetting. So yeah, I've become basically obsessed with getting transmog for my priest.
Okay. Is there anything else that you're trying to accomplish before 9.0 hits?
Well, actually, the other thing is also transmog related, because I have been very much trying to get my cloak up to 15, which involves doing some of the mechanics and some of the activities in game that has been my like least favorite stuff to do outside of probably war fronts in BFA. I get no joy out of the weekly invasions or whatever they're called. The Nazoth stuff anyways.
Yeah.
I get no joy at assaults. That's it. I'm like, one of them's invasions, one of them's assaults. I can't even remember which one they're using right now. But yeah, the assaults, I don't like the assaults. I don't like the visions. Guys, I have tried so hard. I do not like that content. So it has been like pulling teeth, but that is something I want to do before 9.0 hits, because one of my like biggest failures in WoW was not getting the legendary cloak in Pandaria. I got stuck at the raiding portion in that one because I just didn't have a raid team at the time. So, or at least a current raid team. We were kind of, I had some friends that were messing around with like past tiers of raid content in Pandaria, but that was like, we had no idea what we were doing. We were definitely not current content. We were not working on cloaks or anything else. So I never got that. And yeah, that cloak looked awesome. And I can't actually access, and Timeless Isle is one of my favorite pieces of content in the game, and I can't access one section of Timeless Isle because you need the cloak to get there. So I can get there with like other mechanics and stuff on my hunter, but as soon as you land, it kicks you off.
Yeah.
So that made me so sad. But yeah, anyways, so I do want to make sure that I do get my cloak to 15 before the end of 9.0.
Okay.
But that's pretty much it for me. And again, that's totally transmog oriented. That has nothing to do with corruption at all. I couldn't care less about corruption.
Well, I guess for me, there are two things. One, if you follow me on Twitter, you probably are seeing constant announcements about that. Mount farming. I guess you can't take the transmog with you, though in this case we can, but you could ride into battle with a really nice mount. And that's what I've been trying to do. I've been like going through, and I've been doing it sort of systematically on various current content, trying to get all the 8.3 mounts, work my way back to the 8.2 mounts, and going through like that. But I also want to work on achievements, and achievements are very much things that I try and do during slower periods of the game. But I have realized that I have to sort of prioritize certain achievements. There are PvP achievements, your tour duties, that I know is going to be near impossible to get once we move on to new content and other players will not be in there with me. So I want to get my Supplying the Assassin, which is that I have to become an assassin and then loot 25 of the supply drops, which only show up every like I think half hour, and I have to loot them as an assassin.
Yeah,
so as soon as people move on to Shadowlands, I'm not going to be able to do that as easily.
Yeah, because I think because there could still, although I don't actually know how the new level phasing is going to work, and maybe you can enlighten me or maybe you can't. I don't know how much info is available in the alpha, but if you have chosen like BFA to level through and you're in the zones where there could potentially be assassins, like you as a max level player, will you see the leveling players or no?
I believe so if the shards are low enough, but if they're high enough, they'll try and break you up to be with players at your relative level.
Okay, because I was going to say, like, I don't know what the kind of gap would be to actually count, because, you know, like if you kill somebody who is too low level, then they're not worth honor, right? So yeah. I wonder if a similar rule would apply to assassin kills, like if you're killing people that are too low level. But then they also did the scaling stuff. So like I don't really know how all of that would work, if you would actually be able to get your like credit towards becoming an assassin if you're, you know, in those kind of zones with people who aren't max level yet.
Yeah, my current plan scam is to get assassin in Shadowlands, wherever I could get assassin, talk to my friendly mage and get them to port me to Zoldazar directly so I wouldn't lose assassin, and then go to the zone. Then I would have to spend however long waiting for the drops to go, and most likely wouldn't be harassed by other players because I would be 10 levels higher than them and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that is my other plan. The reason that I need to use a mage is that if I go through Orgrimmar, I would then be in the Orgrimmar zone, lose my assassin immediately. So it just seems easier to just do it while I can, like, go directly there afterwards.
Yeah. Do you have anything else that you want to accomplish before 9.0? Or that's basically it, achievements and mounts? Not that that isn't a small list. That's a big list of stuff to get done still, but...
Yeah, I'm very happy to have gotten Longboy. That was, like, part of this list beforehand. But no, I think that's about it.
Then who does our next email come from?
So this one also comes through our Discord. This is from Babylon Redeemer, and he asks, what's something a person can do to help their guild that is often overlooked? And I would say the easiest answer for this is to just be active. The thing that often will kill more guilds than anything else is not drama. It is inactivity. It is when you log in and you're the only person on three times that you log in the week and you go, you know what, let me go find a guild that actually has people on. And then somebody else comes back and they're like, oh, nobody's around. But if both of them were active at the same time, if there's enough people doing the same thing, it builds your guild. You become the guild that picks up people. And so you are not only keeping your guild alive, you are drawing more people into your guild. So just be active. Play the game that you want to play. Talk to people, invite them to join you. Maybe they join your guild. You don't have to be actively recruiting. You just have to be active.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I know I felt it even in our guild. Like we're really lucky in that now, you know, Discord exists. We were just talking earlier on in the show about just the idea of social media and how much it's grown outside of Warcraft and what kind of challenges that presents for Blizzard and for the team. But we're really lucky right now in that we do have Discord, and we have tons and tons and tons of conversations going on in our Discord chat, which kind of keeps us together even when the game is slowing, and we can also play a whole bunch of other games together and everything else. So it's this kind of like outside of WoW thing that's keeping our guild going. But I've definitely noticed that there's times when I log in and it's not necessarily peak, I'd say peak guild times, because our guild is kind of all over the place. But basically, like, I find if I log in and I see even there's only like one or two people online, nobody's talking in guild chat, then usually I'll just go, oh, okay, nobody's really on, nobody's really doing anything, I'm just going to log off. Whereas if there was an active conversation, I might even just stand in Orgrimmar and just sit there and type and talk to my guild. So I think, yeah, just being active in chat. And it's funny, because my suggestion was also going to be on the more like social side of things too, is just like helping herd the cats. There's a lot kind of going on when you first start, like, especially if you have a guild that is like doing any sort of end game content. So if you're trying to organize a PvP group, if you're trying to organize Mythic Plus, if you're trying to organize, you know, a raid, which a lot of guilds are built around their raid teams, then, you know, being the person online, you know, 15 minutes before and, you know, helping poke at people and be like, hey, guys, you know, who's ready for raid tonight? Like, what's going on? Because, you know, your actual raid leader is probably worried about, do we have feasts? Do we have cauldrons? Like, let's start getting some invites out. Like, they don't have the time necessarily to poke all the individual people. Whereas you, if you're sitting there, you've got your invite, you're just sitting at the entrance, you're kind of waiting for things to get going. You can take a look at and see who isn't there yet and then be like, oh, hey, you know, person A, are you coming tonight? Like, let's go and kind of like be the raid leader's hype man. If that makes sense. Like it goes a long way when people are seem to be excited about what you're putting together as a raid leader.
Yeah. And then the other side of that is one thing that people really overlook when the guild is being active is not being cliquey. Like, if you see somebody new, reach out to them. Make them feel part of the team. If you are doing a run and you run with the same people all the time, see if other people want to join you. See if you can, like, start a second group. One of the things that will hurt your guild when it's being active is to create these silos that people don't feel they can enter, to create this like group within the group that is like maybe considered elitist or maybe seems standoffish. That kind of falls into a drama category. The biggest scare you can ever have is when somebody is sort of like, says something and you're like, what are you talking about? It's like, oh, I was talking the other channel. And you're like, wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's going on there? And then all sorts of specters get risen, are like just awakened by that. And so, yeah, try and avoid cliques. Try and be welcoming to everybody. Will help your guild a lot.
Being welcoming to everybody is really important because I don't think that people necessarily even notice when they're doing it. Because I know, like, both, we basically had myself and another part of our leadership of our team had to step away near the beginning of Nyalotha and only just recently came back within the last few weeks. And we both noticed the same thing when we came back. It's like, there's a lot of new faces. There's a lot of, and I mean, as the raid leader, I was still keeping track of recruitment and everything else. So like, they weren't necessarily like new to me, but they were definitely people that I hadn't spent time with before. And, but not even so much all the new faces. It was like all the inside jokes and stuff that we just did not get. And, you know, both of us had the same sort of feeling. And I think he actually said it. He was just like, wow, I've been gone for like 2 months and I feel like I'm stepping into an entirely new team. So whatever you can do to kind of like fight that, and it's not, I don't think it's ever like malicious or anything like that. I don't think people do it on purpose. It's just, you know, when you hang out with the same set of people for, you know, 5-6 hours a week, of course you're going to have inside jokes. Of course you're going to, you know, and some of them can't necessarily be explained or, you know, they're not funny out of context. The very much like you had to be there. Just kind of be cognizant of how many you had to be theirs that you have in your group and try to kind of make sure that you're not always leaning on the old but also making the new so that anyone who is new to the group or returning to the group still feels welcomed.
Yeah, and I mean there's always tons of those. There's the 11 second pull timer, which I'm not explaining to people. Joss laughed at it because she gets it, but understand that you didn't get it, and so that becomes a barrier.
Exactly.
And I did that very specifically because, like, that's the kind of thing that hurts. If I start saying, like, governor to the people...
Yeah, which that was a big one. I have no idea what you guys are talking about when you say that, and it's the kind of thing where it's like, yeah, you had to be there, which is fine, and, you know, it's important when you are, you know, team building. Those inside jokes are going to happen. It's just that, you know, be aware as a team that if everything coming out of your mouth is an inside joke, that you're going to be inherently leaving people out. And you might want to just keep that in mind. And it doesn't mean you have to explain yourself every single time. It just means, you know, focus on making a new joke with the new person.
Yeah. And I think Governor is a really good example of that. We had a new group of people join our team pretty midway through Nyalotha, and they are great players. It was Kicked and other players, and really it was something that included them. It became an inside joke that included them. But then Joss came back and it excluded her. So it was a double-edged sword. And I think that was a big thing.
Absolutely. And these are the kind of like social things that it becomes really hard for one person to do by themselves. And so that's why I think it answers Babylon Redeemer's question so well, is because, you know, there's always things that people can do, like farming mats and helping, you know, in those kind of ways, like putting your time into the actual gameplay. But I think that there, I feel like this was almost a community episode, Manny, because we talked so much about the social side of Warcraft and, you know, like things that aren't necessarily talked about all the time when you talk about contributions. And I think being involved in the social side of your guild is really, really important. I mean, it's the reason that I ended up becoming so disenfranchised from my old guild, is because I just didn't feel like it was super cliquey and I didn't feel accepted anymore. And I wasn't having a great time. I mean, I was probably in the guild for years and never spoke in guild chat because I was feeling like the conversations that were happening there were, you know, names I didn't recognize, talking about, you know, things in very impassioned ways that I wasn't necessarily vibing with. And a lot of inside baseball. And I was just like, you know, this doesn't feel like the place for me anymore. So you want to be the person in your guild that makes it so that people don't feel like that.
Yeah, I definitely think that is the most overlooked part contribution that you can have for a guild.
Yeah, without any kind of standing, you don't need a special role. You can just, you know, be like the greeter, the guild greeter.
And like, you get not an official title, but you become like the heart of the guild. It's like, oh yeah, no, like that guy is the person who like brings everybody into the guild. Like, it's not a title. It is just something that you will earn through your like your efforts. And it does become sometimes like not stated, but definitely appreciated by everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is known.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's going to do it for us this week, guys. Hope we answered your questions well. Thank you guys so much for listening. Manny, where can folks find you on the internet?
So as always, you can follow me over at Twitter. That is TrueVillainManny, true without the E. You can join us in the Discord, which I've been pimping clearly throughout this episode. That is over at bit.ly/fazdiscord. And Joss, where can people find you around the internet?
You can find me on Twitter and Twitch. I'm at Joss Plays. That's J-O-C-E Plays. You can also check out tgistudios.com/faz if you're looking for our show notes. That's going to do it for us this week. Thank you guys so much for listening.
And until next time, guys, please stay safe.
But what about my hits and my crits?
I think that's a more important message right now.